One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Josh Brown, you're back.
Scott Tilford, it's Hello. Good to be back. I've got to admit, I had such a 1-2 punch of a couple of weeks. It was such a shame. Unfortunately, was away 2 weeks ago because I was at a funeral. And then, what a nightmare thing to happen, to get COVID-19 at a funeral, which took me out of last week as well.
It sounds so outdated now as well, COVID-19. So why are you still here, COVID-19?
I've got COVID-23. Hate this crack. But finally back, and it's good to be back and talking about video games because I've been playing a lot in my downtime. Obviously, couldn't leave the house again. So I've been playing some insane stuff.
You did sort of slightly lose it a little bit.
More than a little bit.
You know, a little bit. I will say it's very good to have you back. I love his little face. His little face gets me through the week, it does. And so I'm very glad to have Josh Brown back. The thing that's hilarious, though, is that I'm away next week and the week after. And for most of the week after that, but I am going to Japan, so it'll be very nice and lovely. But this is the only in-person wind-up for the week. And we're going to try and pre-record some stuff.
This is the thing, right?
We'll just have to wait
and
see.
We had so many plans. Yes. We had so many things we were going to do last week specifically. And then, unfortunately, the old Rona struck and we couldn't do any of them because I couldn't record, which is great.
Which is more than fair. But I think, just to let the people know that there might be no pods in a couple of weeks. We'll have to wait and see. We're going to do what we can. So we're going to talk about Resident Evil 4.
Yes.
And demos, because you have a general opinion on demos. And I thought for the wind-up, I didn't think if I said our name, Scott Tilford and Josh Brown.
Good morning, Scott.
Hello. We should talk about the Resident Evil 4 demo that's out there and a little bit of some other stuff that we've been playing. And then we'll do the video game news and stuff, because this is always the wind-up where we do the latest video game news and conversations in the industry. But demos in general, you're not a fan.
Well, let me clarify this, because I love the fact that demos exist. Yes. I love that the industry is re-embracing demos, because I think having a demo for a game is a net positive. And in that period where it went away, that sucked, because it doesn't give people a chance to actually see what they're playing. True. In a time where there are so many bullshot trailers out there, where there's so much marketing speak that ultimately means nothing, when there's so many false promises that end up falling flat on day one, it's great to have a demo as a proof of concept. Mm-hmm. That said, personally speaking, I will never play a demo, because most games that I want to buy, I already know in my brain I'm going to get them anyway.
So like a movie trailer.
Like exactly like a movie trailer. That was what I was going to talk about next. So like a movie trailer for a movie I want to see, I won't watch it. Mm-hmm. So if, when a demo for a game comes out that I want to play, like Resident Evil 4, I will avoid it at all costs.
Something, the thing is with Resi, like with Resident Evil 4, because the original is such a stellar title, I'm going back through the original. I think I'm going to end up boning myself because I'm going back through the original now, and then I'll be finished that, and then I'll go into the remake, and I'll be like, I don't even want this. I've just finished it. Which I did that with Dead Space, yeah. So I'm kind of weaning myself off that. But I'm also aware that I leave for Japan at this beginning of next week. So I kind of want stuff for the play-in anyway.
Yeah.
So I don't know. The head's a mess. I'm trying to play everything as much as possible. But the Resident Evil 4 demo, to just quickly touch on that, does seem awesome. Obviously, I would recommend Jules' video. Jules and Sai have done some stuff. There's more things coming towards the end of this week. But yeah, Jules did the review that went up last Friday. So go check that out for all of his thoughts.
Blew my mind.
What a machine.
That, by the way, I've been off so much, I didn't even know we got a code and had a review in progress. So when that went up, I was like, how have I missed so much?
We're just on it, Josh Brown. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, you certainly are.
That was Jules. He was like, I'll just take my days off and play through it. I was like, are you sure? Because you don't need to. And he's like, no, I've got access to Resident Evil. I'll go play it when I'm off. And so, yeah, Jules played through it. It was all of last Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And then Dan Durkin, who's a phenomenal, one of our phenomenal editors, put that together on the Thursday. So it was ready for the Friday morning.
Nice.
So we had a ridiculous turnaround. But it got up, it got online, so it's fine. I'm going to talk about Resident Evil 4 stuff in reference to what it means for the industry in a little bit, but we'll get there. You wanted to talk a little bit about Dead Island 2. We do have a video on that, but you were saying about touching on it in a podcast.
We did. I wanted to talk about it last week. Obviously, didn't get the chance, but me and Jules played that a few weeks ago now. The video is up on the What Culture Gaming channel. So
it's also monetized, which is hilarious.
It is monetized. It got monetized.
And YouTube initially were like, this is full of people getting punched through the face. Literally. We can't give you money for this. And I was just like, well, let's try a censored version. They went, nah, it's still too much. So I was like, well, I might as well just put the full gore version out because people would, I'd rather people saw that and it not get monetized because then at least we have something and it's a really fun video. And then like a couple of days later, YouTube, the little pound symbol like flicked back on and I was like, I'm just going to hands off this and be like, if you guys think this is monetizable, then that's fine.
There we go.
That game, that video is, it's like a, it might as well be a fatality montage. Oh, it's 100%. Ridiculous.
Yeah. And so I definitely think everyone should check that out, but I just kind of wanted to talk about it a little bit more because I've been thinking about Dead Island 2 since I played it. And it's a game that could have fallen out the brain very easily, especially with everything else that's been going on in all of the games that have been coming out and the new trailers and all of that stuff. But I keep thinking about Dead Island 2. It made a really good first impression, I thought. And I can really go for a more focused zombie bashing video game at this moment in time. Mm-hmm. Like you were talking about the gore there. The gore is the thing. And I keep kind of dreaming about
the flesh system.
The flesh system. I feel like a bit of a sicko thinking about it so much. But it is so gruesome and so gory. I want to see what else I can do to these zombie bodies, which, again, makes me sound like a psychopath.
Do you think, though, that they're going to be able to beat the sort of like flesh exploding gun from Dead Space where you just shoot people's flesh off?
You know what? That rules.
That's the bar. That's the bar for this year anyway.
And I think it might beat it. Like, the flesh system in Dead Space, I love video games. We talk at length in podcast form about flesh systems.
Yeah.
The flesh system in Dead Space is amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, the idea that you're kind of drilling through or cutting through skin and bone and tendons right down
to... I'm doing a contorted face in your direction, Josh.
Right down to the very limb itself to get it off, because the whole point of that game is dismembering limbs. It's really effective, as is the one in Resident Evil 2. Mm-hmm. The way that they made the zombies work in that game is really scary, because you could just like shoot off chunks of them and then keep coming. But I think Dead Island, and I'm not paid to say this or anything like
that. No, we're not sponsored by them.
Not at all. But I think it might have it beat in terms of pure viscerality and pure, I cannot believe I have just done that to someone or something.
I tell you what, in that vein, to roll in the Resident Evil 4 demo, obviously Resident Evil 4 always had that dedicated knife button anyway.
Yeah.
Hold the shoulder button, do some knife swipes. In the remake, they mark enemies with the slashes, with the gashes. Which the first time I did it, I was like, I've really just sliced him with a knife there.
Tell me more about this then, because obviously I've not played the demo and I've not even seen that much gameplay from Resident Evil 4. Have they taken over that flesh and wound system from Resi 2 and expanded upon it?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, my God. If you know, in that, because the chainsaw demo, which is out there, is just the opening village section. I forget if back in the day they did that as the PS2 and the GameCube. Was there a GameCube demo? I only played it on PS2.
I can't remember.
But either way, that's what they've put out. That's obviously one of the most iconic parts of that game overall. And so, yeah, they put out the whole village bit, and you can still find a hand grenade. You can still find, there's actually a TMP you can find. I think it's exclusive to the demo, but there's a whole thing where if you empty your inventory in the demo before you go into the village, the sewer grates are open. You can go down there and find the TMP, which is a little machine gun, submachine gun. But yeah, the first time I waited until there was a cluster of villagers and then just threw a little grenade in the middle and a whole bunch of torsos and legs all flew everywhere. And I was like, yeah, this is very full on. I also accidentally set fire to the cow that then you can still do that. Well, you can still do that. And I didn't mean to do that. I was running away from the villagers and I guess someone threw an axe and it must have hit the cow or something, because all of a sudden the barn I was in was on fire and I was like, well, I didn't do this.
I don't know if this would hold up in court.
the cow defense program. But everything was just suddenly on fire and then that cow charged forward and killed everybody, which was brilliant. And I just sort of stood there just like with most of the village cleared out to fight off against that Dr. Salvador Chainsaw Man. Gore stuff is, it's very much the system that they perfected or brought out in RE2, the remake of Resident Evil 2, that is, on full display here. The gashes you can do, I feel like people are probably thrown up at this point, but the gashes you can do with the knife, they feel more like you're applying a texture to someone when you do it, as opposed to you are cutting into them.
Yeah.
Which is probably the best way to go. I don't necessarily need to literally have knife crime in my video games. But still, they do have those little additional details in there that weren't in the original, just to hammer home the fact that you are slicing these dudes up.
Yeah, that sounds... Honestly, as gross as it is, kind of what I want. And I hadn't thought about it in terms of Resident Evil 4 until this very moment, actually. I just assumed it would kind of be like the violence in the original game, which, you know, got bloody at times, but it wasn't on the level of 2. It wasn't like you were necessarily blowing off limbs in the same way that you could with zombies in the older games, and the enemies themselves weren't decaying in the way that those zombies were. What a Monday morning, man. I've not even had any breakfast yet.
We're decaying ourselves. But I think the thing that makes me fascinated with this is when you do the very beginning of Resident Evil 4, at least in the demo, the way that they catch you up to speed is using footage from RE2 and 3 Remake, which I guess makes sense. That's probably what they were always going to do. And at the beginning of, well, the beginning of RE3 was all this like weird live action thing that they shot, which kind of took me out of it a little bit. But when it comes to 4, seeing them sort of go like, okay, this is the new timeline, these are the new series of events as filmed through or as montaged together through the clips that were in the remakes, that makes me wonder if we are going to go forward and redo 5 and 6, because if you've developed this system that very much reacts to explosions and gunfire and machine guns and whatever, you might as well do RE5 and 6 where you're mowing dudes down and you can, maybe the gore system actually makes the action focus make more sense, because it's always that thing of like, after now that they've done RE4, do they then do 5 and 6 because they were the ones that weren't liked as much, more so 6. Some people like 5, but still, it's like, do you try and make them more horror based, or do you try and just give into the action stuff because the fans of 5 and 6 liked them because they were more over the top?
It's interesting, man. I don't know what they're going to do next. Whether they, I think they'll do 5. If they do 1, they'll do 5. I don't think they'll remake 6 just because that would be such an overhaul, and it's only, what, 11 years old at this point? And I know we've had a remake of The Last of Us when that was only 8 or 9 years old. But people love The Last of Us. Well, that's true. People love The Last of Us. People don't love Resi 6. And I think that's more of a gamble. You know, the games that they've remade so far have been fan favorites. People love Resident Evil 2. The idea to get to play that again is awesome. Mm-hmm. People love Resi 3. They kind of dropped the ball on that a little bit, but the concept was sound. Mm-hmm. Resident Evil 4, one of the most beloved games of all time. That's great. After that, you kind of get into a territory of, well, people like 5, and you could make people love 5, perhaps, but is it worth the effort? Is there something else they can remake? I think it's telling that they didn't remake something like Code Veronica or Resident Evil 0 again.
Yes.
Because... you know, that those might be more interesting games to remake.
Veronica would be the next logical step.
That's it, right? Yeah. But it's a riskier bet because you don't have that inbuilt mainstream love for it. So I wonder whether the same thinking puts them off 5 and 6. But then again, 5 is like one of the highest selling Resident Evil games ever, you know? Yeah. So maybe they look at just like the sales figures and say, what if we could capture that again?
It's almost like the Splinter Cell, the more Splinter Cell got action focused, the more the core fandom hated it, but the more it sold. And it's kind of the same thing in Resi's case. For me, it's almost more fascinating if you specifically devote the budget, the time, and the overall care and attention to a more divisive installment. I would love to see them try 6 again. Are there parts of that story that you can reframe? Is there a way to do that? The go-to for like a game that everyone hated is like May Cry 2, and you sometimes bring that up as like, it's like fascinating because of how much they got wrong.
Yeah.
If Capcom said, we're going to remake Devil May Cry 2, that's almost more fascinating because it's like, can you make that work?
Yes.
Because 2 is still the end of the overall timeline, so there's still something to be done there to capitalize on. Well, I guess, no. There's 2 after 5? I forget. I know that they announced that they remixed the timeline. I'm sure 2 is the end of the timeline, and 5 takes place before 2.
Does it? I thought 5 was after 2.
I forget, to be honest. Wrong, though. I think that was the initial idea. There was a whole thing where Capcom announced that they were remixing the timeline.
Yeah.
Because it was just clearly them having a boardroom meeting going, none of this makes any sense. And the idea of just putting like solemn Dante at the end of the timeline.
Yeah.
But whatever, the idea of going back to older games that weren't received as well, and can you save them, quote unquote?
Yes.
Were there enough good ideas buried in there? I like the idea of that.
I fully agree. I think that's a fascinating idea, and I would love to see what they did to 5 and 6. Mm. However, I think perhaps the safest bet is to go back and do 1 again, because that's already had a remake on GameCube that you can play on PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 5 and modern consoles, essentially. But that's a remake in the vein of the original Resident Evil 1.
Yeah.
It's, you know, still isometric. It's still tank controls, although you have an option. You know what I mean? It's not done in the style of a modern Resident Evil control scheme.
The aiming is terrible.
it's one of the best games of all time.
It is, but the aiming is terrible.
I don't know. Like intentionally aiming in that game. Maybe. intentionally so is what struggle. I would argue.
I just bought that again last night.
Did you really?
I'm definitely in a mindset of I'm going to have a 12-hour flight. What can I play on this 12-hour flight? And yes. I bought Resident Evil 5 and the original again.
I love it.
Because I'm sick.
Well, they're both great, man. They're both great games in their own way. And I love the remake of 1. But I would be interested to see what 1 looks like and how 1 is expanded upon with the kind of formula that they have now for the remakes with the Resident Evil 4 style shooting mechanics with that kind of style of presentation.
I would love that.
That would be amazing, man.
Yeah, and then do 0. Yeah. Me and Jules talked about this on the UBP last week, but I love single location horror. And if you did a really good over the shoulder train based horror, I would take that. Like we talk about Cold Fear every other week.
We certainly do.
It's the new Max Payne 3 because finally Max Payne 3 is on Xbox. You can just go play it, and that game does deserve a better release and everything. But the idea of like Cold Fear coming back, which was this random one off horror on a boat game that I guess Resident Evil Revelation did to some degree. But you could always do that better.
Let me ask you a question about Resident Evil.
Please do.
I apologize if you've already talked about this, but my big question about how this game is going to play, I'm sure it's going to play amazing.
Yeah.
But part of the flaw of the original Resident Evil 4 was that you still had tank controls to an extent. You didn't have full freedom over
your
character.
You're going to tap into something that is very controversial here.
Right. Yeah. You had to stand in place to aim and shoot. You couldn't even, if I recall correctly, reload while moving. Now, I presume you can do all of those things.
Yes.
And how does that affect the flow of gameplay?
I will be the controversial man in the room because I definitely prefer the original shooting.
Nice.
And I think that's because I also have that weird twisted love of tank controls and old school survival horror and definitely PS1 horror where it's kind of what we were saying about the aiming before where there's the combination of the sort of lack of control that you had with the fixed perspectives in the original games in Silent Hill and in Resi really added to the whole like, oh my God, I can't get away from this thing. Oh my God, this thing's on me. Like, I think that was really effective in making you terrified. Obviously, a lot of people just thought, I just can't control this. Yeah. And it was like over time it became like an abject negative and they got rid of it. Playing Resident Evil 4, the chainsaw demo, I then went back to the original and just for now, I prefer the original. And I know that that's insanity. I told Jules that and he was like, that's ridiculous because they've added so much more to the new one. And I get it. The new one moves more like a Gears of War. Even though I guess in Gears you were still, could you even move and shoot in Gears? I'm blanking
you
on
could,
that now.
You could.
Right. But yeah, the original, you sort of had to pick a spot in the level where you'd be like, okay, I'm going to kite all the enemies around this corner, and then I'm going to plant my feet, spin around, and just take them all out as they all come around. And I like that feeling. I like that whole, I'm making a last stand kind of thing. And so I always loved that. It's not that I'm against the new one or anything, but I definitely have a love for control schemes factoring into horror. And I think that that's a weird balance to do. And I think if they'd stuck to that in the remake, more people would have just said, what the hell are you guys doing?
Absolutely.
But I definitely do have a love for the original feel.
I agree. Mm. I think, you know, maybe it was a limitation at the time, maybe it wasn't, but they definitely build around the concept. It's not a flaw. It's not something that they didn't think about.
No.
Like all of the encounters in the original Resident Evil 4 is built around the amount of control you have over Leon. And like you said, I like the flow that instills within the gameplay. I like the tension that creates where you, like you said, you have this kind of like last stand feeling with every gunfight. You have these Ganados coming towards you and you're having to stand still. You're having to, you know, manage the moment in a way that you might have more freedom if you can fully move and shoot at the same time or move
also,
and reload. And I'm not saying, again, I'm also not saying one is better than the other, but it will impact the gameplay. And I'm going to also be interested to see which I prefer having played both.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that the remake does way better is like weapon switching, where it's just on the D-pad rather than going into the inventory. And obviously you still have the dedicated knife button. But one thing of doing that whole plant your feet and defend yourself thing is that if you're up against a crowd of Ganados or enemies as they, you know, come towards you, maybe one of them you go, okay, I'm shooting a couple of heads. Maybe I'll pop a dude in the knee and then they'll go weakened. I can run into the fray and roundhouse kick the whole lot of them and then go somewhere else and make another stand. There's almost a tactical element to that that isn't really there in the remake necessarily, although you can still do the quick turn stuff. You can force that method of play if you want. It's just that I think in the remake, it just fundamentally doesn't make you think that way because you do have a full range of motion, which is just, it is a weird thing to focus on. But I think if you directly compare them and if you came down on the side of liking that feeling of like dealing with, you know, like being backed into a corner and can you get enough shots off in the right place and that kind of thing. I actually, just for now, and I've not played the full game, I've only played the demo. I prefer the original for now. But I think some of that will be my, I just prefer the originals to stuff anyway. I do love how much they've changed and you'll just wait. I'll not describe this for the people who don't necessarily want to know yet, but I love how much they've changed the very first encounter in Resident Evil 4. It was a real pleasant delight.
Ooh.
And I spent a long time, because there's lots of things, lots of aspects of the environment that have like messages on them now that are all written in Spanish. So I spent a long time just typing them out into Google. And then someone replied to me on Google just saying, oh, it's actually this. And I was like, that's so cool. There are like more lore details that you can just find. And I quite like the idea of them writing or coming up with an idea for a environment that plays into how interconnected we all are. Like, you know, you have access to a Google Translate app that we didn't have in like 2004. So I like stuff like that. But yeah, Resi is out on Friday. We'll have loads more like I said, Jules and Sai have more stuff coming out in the future. I'll be in Japan.
You will.
I'll actually be in the Capcom Cafe.
The home of Resident Evil, some would
Leon
say.
Himself. but yeah, so you mentioned Dead Island 2 before. Was there anything else you wanted to mention about that?
No, just that I was kind of really thinking surprised by the game, that I was still thinking about it, and like I'm looking forward to it, just to kind of direct people to that video where we talked about it more in depth. I've been playing a lot of survival horror games recently to get in the mood for Resident Evil 4. I played through the Evil Within 1, and I just love that kind of fiction, and I'm excited for Dead Island 2 because its setting is what I want out of this kind of fiction. I love post-apocalyptic stuff. I love The Last of Us. I love Mad Max. But I feel like that has kind of been exhausted at this point.
Oh, yeah.
And I actually embrace a return to like sort of Outbreak Day style, for lack of a better term, Outbreak Day style settings where the infection or whatever it is has just started. So with Dead Island 2, you know, zombies have just like popped up in LA and everything is on fire. These luscious homes and villas are completely blood streaked. And I always love that juxtaposition and horror of a glamorous thing kind of like streaked in blood.
It's like it's hardly ever done. Like the idea, like RE2 and 3 did it, like more so in the remake, like especially with like 3's like framing and stuff. But yeah, mostly it's just we jump like 10, 15, 20 years after and then it's just like, okay, what's left? But as opposed to like, excuse me, in the moment of everything kicking off, like that is a fascinating thing to focus on.
Exactly. And I'm going to keep ragging on Dying Light 2. If you've listened to this podcast or watched these videos over the past year, you'll know I was disappointed with Dying Light 2. But part of the disappointment in that was also the setting, which to me just felt a little bit generic, a little bit drab, a little bit post-apocalypse 101. And, you know, Dead Island 2 might not do anything new that we haven't seen before, but it feels fresh in the moment because we have so many of these game spaces that are overgrown, you know, kind of duct taped together human settlements 10, 20 years after the world has ended. And those can still be done really well. You know, I still love The Last of Us. I love The Last of Us Part 2's aesthetic. But I'm kind of in a moment right now where I'm embracing that kind of more modern day, more in the moment apocalypse than I am the post-apocalypse.
Well, it's kind of just like, what do we do with the zombie genre? Like, it's been such an exhausted thing. Like, even from Left 4 Dead, I feel like that sort of ignited this whole thing in the gaming industry. Like, oh my God, guys, zombies are awesome. Obviously, we had that in Resident Evil, but Left 4 Dead onwards felt like really doubling down on it. I guess Dead Rising as well. It was a little bit before then. But I feel like overall, zombie stuff, either people go, oh my God, I'm done, or it's like, no, give me more of it. And it's like, I like the idea of them sort of thinking of a more, a fresher environment. Like, because I was not expecting us to get hands-on with Dead Island 2.
No.
And for you and Jules to be this like effusive in the praise and be like, no, it's actually brilliant, because I'm still yet to play it and stuff. I do want to talk about, and we'll get to gaming news and stuff after this, but you've also been playing The Long Dark, which is one of the most overlooked survival games like in recent memory. I love that game. I didn't play that much of it, but I love the whole idea of it. It was back in the boom of survival stuff, like 2015, I think, is when it came out. It was in early access for a long time ago, but the whole idea of like wind chill and all these different environmental effects and like really dealing with like almost Breath of the Wild made it bigger, the idea of like, oh, if your character is freezing, make a fire and then sit next to it for a while to get warmed up. And I know that a lot of those mechanics are like survival 101, but I always loved what The Long Dark was going for. I only ever played it in the early access period, but I thought it was really cool.
I'm really surprised by how much I'm loving it. It's been in my backlog to get to for years at this
point. 8 years.
Literally a long, long time. And I've never just found the time to sit down and play it. Because survival games aren't necessarily my thing either, or it's not something I go to often. But obviously, having a week inside, I decided to jump into it finally because it was on the PlayStation Plus.
I was wondering how you like store. Happened
so,
upon it.
Yeah, it was free, so I thought, you know what, let's jump into this, and I actually love it, man. Like I'm just playing the story mode at this moment in time. Just finished episode one, so it's early days, but the survival mechanics, just like the kind of core of them, you know, having to eat, sleep, drink, you know, go to sleep, all of that stuff is, like you said, you know, it's routine. It's in all of these games. But I like the way that everything connects within this setting of this, again, almost like apocalyptic storm that's happened. It's knocked all the power out. You're stumbling across these villages where, you know, bandits have come in, like killed a bunch of people. The first episode is built around someone called the Grey Mother, who's this blind old woman.
They added so much.
They really did. They really did. This whole, like, the story has a great tone to it. It's almost like Fallout-esque. But yeah, you're in this house of this person called the Grey Mother. She's blind. She's the only person left in this town. She has this rifle. She's lost all of her food, so you're essentially going out, getting her food, doing some missions for her. And it just has this really cool tone of, like, you against, like, the world, but the world itself is kind of ending this kind of...
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon. Like the long dark of the title. And in that setting, I love, but more importantly, I love the kind of like simplicity of the mechanics. Like you said, you know, being caught out in the cold, needing to warm yourself up, needing to find shelter to build a fire, but building a fire is really hard. So you need to get all of the ingredients, for lack of a better term. And then even then, building that fire isn't guaranteed. You have a 60% chance of it lighting and staying lit. And it's just that kind of like moment to moment stress which I usually don't go for because it stresses me out too much, but is really well balanced in this. And in the story mode, at least, having that home base is great. Like stumbling across a deer that's just being killed by a wolf. So then you scare the wolf off and then you take the deer's meat and it feels like you've just won the lottery because then you've got like a bunch of this meat you can then cook and put in the fridge and there's you sorted on the food.
In the fridge?
Yeah, well, in your home base, you've got a fridge.
Because when I played it, it was like, again, it was in early access. So it was like you had a big open environment. There was a pack of wolves, there was a big lake, and there was a lake house with some smoke coming out of it.
Yeah.
And so you could go to the lake house, but there wasn't anybody inside it. But then you could use that as a place to like bank some shelter.
Yeah.
And then you would try and explore around that. And I found there was a dam. And I sort of explored around there, but there wasn't a story component back then. It was just the survival mechanics. And could you survive in this this overall environment trying to explore further and further afield?
Yeah. Well, that's what kind of put me off because I worried that it would be too intimidating. But the story kind of focuses it because it gives you, these maps to explore. But it also gives you kind of like these objectives and focuses the action a little bit where you're still relying on these survival mechanics. That's still the primary mode of play.
Yeah.
But it gives you a bit more focus, which is kind of what I personally needed from the experience, like some kind of like intent beyond just surviving to the next day. I love Don't Starve.
Yes. Oh my God, Don't Starve.
But it gave me an existential crisis at a certain point because I thought, giving up is easier than just continuing. You know what I mean? I'd be the person in a zombie apocalypse who just gave up day one, thought this ain't worth it. You know what I mean?
We never talk about survival games. I don't know. We've never really talked about it because I'm not sure it was ever one of your genres. But I feel like in this thing, Don't Starve was something that me and my wife played 2 years solid or whatever. Like I followed that through early access and then to the launch. That was back when I cared about Steam games for a little bit, and I was trying to make them work on a Mac. Don't Starve was one of the rare games that would work on a Mac. But I remember in Don't Starve when they added, if you chop down too much wood, one of the trees comes to life and kills you.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, I can't do this. That game though was phenomenal. Shout out to Clay Entertainment. They're one of the best devs. Just one of the most visually striking and reliable devs that we have in the industry. I absolutely love Don't Starve. Overall though, Long Dark feels like one of those games that was just overlooked in its own genre. Like even though I think a lot of people cited it at the time of this is the future of survival games, or this is the foundation of survival games.
This is it. I don't have that reference point. I don't know how its survival mechanics, stack up with something like The Forest or another survival game that I haven't played. But
Fallout mod.
Fallout mod. The Fallout New Vegas hardcore mode. Yes. That's my only mode of reference for this.
Mm-hmm.
But I was attracted again, like Dead Island, which is why I think it links to the setting of it. I think the setting is gorgeous, like this snow-covered mountain with these rundown shacks and you're kind of surviving in this apocalyptic scenario, but one that isn't, full of the more obvious tropes. It isn't full of monsters or blood or anything like that. It's mostly just kind of snow-covered houses that will kill you because they're freezing and a few wolves out in the wilderness, maybe a bear or two if you're particularly unlucky. And it's about managing resources. It's about keeping your, character healthy, keeping them stocked up with clothes and stuff. And just that gameplay loop in that setting particularly really has appealed to me for a while. And I'm so glad that I actually sat down and played it because it's definitely worth it.
The console version of it is very tantalizing because, like I said, early access back in the day, there was very little to it. It was just a set of mechanics, but they were in themselves still fascinating for that time. It felt like the survival genre was becoming a whole other thing. So I might check that out as well. Maybe it's on Switch. Maybe I can play it for 12 hours on the way to Japan. I will see. Evil Within 1, you mentioned getting through that stuff as well. We should talk about some gaming news because there's loads of stuff. The only other thing I was going to touch on is how cool I think the fact, because basically, we'll get to gaming news, but overall, my last sort of few days, I've just been trying random stuff, and I kind of got sucked into a Nintendo Switch Online hole.
Nice.
Because I think it's really kind of heartwarming, and this is a stupid thing to be heartwarming when it's such a capitalistic practice, but the idea of having 30 years worth of entire franchises just on the Switch, I know I'm paying for them, I'm paying the stupid Switch Online expansion pass price, but you can play 30 plus years of almost all the Marios. The only one that they're missing is Galaxy 2, but you can play all of them, original Mario, even Doki Doki Panic, which became Mario 2, and then the original Mario 2, the Lost Levels. You can really go through those franchises. So I kind of fell in a hole of I'm going to go through every single Mario, I'm going to go through every single Kirby, I'm going to go through every single Metroid. I'm not going to finish every single one of them. I have done that in the past for most of them, but I ended up just doing that. Me and my wife sat down and just played through all the Kirbys, and I think it's lush seeing the evolution of a franchise right in front of you, and just literally a couple of button presses between each one. I totally get that every person who plays PC is saying, we've had this for 20 years because that's just emulation. But having it all on the Switch is really handy. And I think being able to take that with you is really cool. So one, shout out to Doki Doki Panic, which is like the Super Mario Brothers 2. It was like an original game that became Mario Brothers 2. That barely plays like a Mario game, but it looks like one. It's cool. But mainly the Metroid stuff, because they added Metroid Fusion last week or the week before, which is the Game Boy Advance Metroid. But it also is like Metroid 4 in the main canon, because then Dread is like Metroid 5. I'm probably getting my numbers wrong, but like it's the second newest one
right
in the story.
Yeah.
Before you get to Dread. And Fusion's just a phenomenal Metroid game. Like if anyone ever just wants to get Metroid, for me it's always either Super Metroid or Fusion. They're just great games. So I'm going back through Fusion. Obviously it plays beautifully. It's just nice having it on the Switch. It's even bigger on the TV. That game's flow is just perfect. Like you get just enough indication of where to go. And then sometimes they let you off the reins a little bit. It's like go find a certain door lock that needs opening or whatever. But it's so snappy to play, and the upgrades come thick and fast. It's just a really good Metroid.
It's kind of shocking, I think, how bad video game preservation is, that stuff like this, rightfully so, is championed now by the likes of you, but how it isn't normalized across the board. Why can I not boot up my PlayStation and play through Metal Gear Solid 1, 2, 3, 4, 5?
A history of Crash.
A history of Crash Bandicoot, you know. A history of Resident Evil, for as good as it is that we have the remakes of 2, 3, and 4... The fact that, you know, Resident Evil 2 is so hard, the original is so hard to come by in its original form, sucks, man.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And it's people love, I think, the ability to have that history at your fingertips. It makes you appreciate the modern games, and it allows you to try a piece of history that you might not have experienced. I have been begging Nintendo to put more Zelda games on the Switch for years, and they finally started to do that. But why wasn't that stuff there at launch? Why are you not opening up your catalog to potential new lifelong fans? When I jumped into my first proper Nintendo console that I owned, that wasn't just a Wii that my family had, with the Switch, and played Breath of the Wild, all I wanted to do was discover more about Zelda. But at the time, there was no other Zelda game on that platform. I think it was when the remake of the kind of like 2D one was just about to come out, Link's Awakening. Yeah. I think that was only announced at that time. So literally all I had was Breath of the Wild, and it's just... To me, it's such a shame, and it's such a missed opportunity to not honor that history. And it's cool to see that Nintendo seems to finally be getting that again with these Metroid games and with all of these other Mario titles that they've been putting on their system.
Yeah, it's worth saying that all the Zeldas are on there now, other than Twilight. Well, you haven't got Wind Waker or Twilight Princess, but you do, obviously, Skyward Sword HD, Breath of the Wild. If you go further back, you got the original one, and like even like Legend of Zelda 2, this like weird side-scrolly attempt at Zelda that like some people love, some people hate. But yeah, all that stuff is there now, thankfully, but it took them a long time to sort of build those libraries. But I just think, I just love that. I love having the like gaming history at your fingertips kind of thing, especially with modern emulation embedded. Like as much as I have a Steam Deck and I use that to play older games, it's not that easy to sort of like, I mean, it probably is to people who do it all the time, but like to me, it's not that easy to sort of like make a manual save and then rely on that rather than the in-game save. Whereas, you know, on Switch, it's just both triggers at the same time, hit save, and that's, you can make your own custom checkpoints. It's like, yeah. It's so much easier, and you can just rewind something that was like a BS part of an old game. You just go back and do it again. It's so easy. It just works.
And that's what you should expect, because like maybe the emulation part of it is quote unquote easy, but should you have to do it? Yeah. I don't think so. Like if you were into movies and someone said the way to get this, you know, beloved in mainstream old movie was to do this workaround, as easy as it might be to do it, why should you have to do it? Like in the modern age where we have all of these streaming services, where we have all of these platforms, where we have so many digital storefronts, like as easy as that is, like in my opinion, publishers and console makers should be taking that stuff more seriously and be implementing these tools that makes it really easy, that makes it really accessible for people that aren't just the diehards who, you know, really want to dedicate the time to go back.
Well, that's why I just really hate the PlayStation Plus premium tier. Because it's like, I just compare what they are offering at that top tier. You got Ape Escape, Legend of Dragoon, a couple of Siphon Filters, whatever, compared to the entire history of Mario, Zelda, Metroid, Kirby. Like, it's ludicrous that they don't have that, especially when it's Sony and you have all these historical PlayStation IP. Let's talk about some gaming news, though. Although one of these first things is more of just a wider talking point, kind of springing off the Resident Evil 4 remake scores, because that got 91 over on Metacritic. Mm. And I saw a couple of people just tweeting this, and I was kind of thinking this as well. The highest reviews game, the highest reviewed games of 2023 right now are all remakes. It's Metroid Prime Remastered has 95, Dead Space has 89, and Resident Evil 4 Remake has 91. And there's also Persona 4 Golden that got re-released. That's the exact same game re-released in that case, and that's on like 93 or something as well over on Metacritic. But I think it's an interesting talking point that like these are all types of games that haven't really been done like this. Obviously, Dead Space is quite like the Resident Evil remakes, but that idea of like the value in those old game systems, something like a Metroid Prime, and something like how pioneering Resident Evil was, like remembering how that felt.
Yeah.
And just sort of there's something in those old games coming back and dominating and being able to sort of modernize themselves in a way that I think is kind of worth talking about in terms of when you parallel it with the amount of life service games that are just dying on their ass and the fact that Suicide Squad has been delayed indefinitely and things like that, where, you know, the likes of Exoprimal, Suicide Squad, games that just no one cares. Like, it'll come out and maybe you'll try it. And Multiverse has completely died. Like, had a good couple of weeks and then died. It's like, there's something about the fact that these games are coming back with great story components, great characters, a reason to play them, and they're designed to be finished.
Yeah.
I think that's another thing, is that they're designed for you to see all of it. That stuff's doing really well. Hi-Fi Rush, obviously that's a new game, but that's got an 89 on Metacritic as well. It's like, people are responding to single-player games. And that just is an interesting talking point compared to what the industry thinks we want.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I feel like we're definitely seeing a tide shift in a way, especially with the response to Suicide Squad in particular, where that came out and everyone just went, no, not for me.
Not for me, thank you.
That's
apparently because you were away when that broke.
Yes.
But like, I did a little solo news thing for it because that's been delayed. It was just indefinitely. And then Jeff Grubb was like, I'm hearing 2024. And I was like, oh my God. Like, I mean, even if that game got canned, I don't think anyone would care, other than the people working on it, obviously.
Obviously.
But I mean, in terms of the reception, it's not like anyone's going like, oh my God, it got delayed. Like,
I had a real... I'm not really being sad about Suicide Squad until I realized after it got delayed that I might go almost 15 years until I get a new Rocksteady game that I care about. Because Arkham Knight was 2015.
Yes.
This is going to be 2023 at the earliest, 2024 most likely. It's going to take them another, 4 years at least to make something after that.
And right,
there's not even a guarantee that I will care about that. So,
and even then, the founders have left the studio now.
Yep.
So
I was thinking about it in those terms, just, you know, kind of lamenting the passage of time and how long games get, how long games take to be made. But Suicide Squad in particular is not tickling my pickle.
No.
And I don't think it's tickling the pickle of anyone.
The pickle remains untickled.
It certainly does, in the same way that Dead Space, Metroid, and Resident Evil 4 seem to be tickling everyone's pickle. Need to get off this analogy, this metaphor. But also, I think it's interesting that, you know, it indicates, yes, that people are responding to these kind of more classic styles of games, these games that can be finished. But also, are they cheating a little bit, Scott? Because they have taken three of the most beloved games ever made, definitely two of the best games ever made with Metroid Prime and Resident Evil 4, and then remaking them. They couldn't really miss, could they? Like, they would
not
have
really
to be trying to miss and not get a really high score with those, especially with the amount of work that's clearly gone into all three of them. You look at even Metroid Prime, which is billed as a remaster, but that thing's practically a remake compared to the original. The amount of work that's gone in, it's not like they're hack jobs. It's not like they're being ported over for a quick buck. Like,
no, they're done properly.
They're some of the best games of all time, remade with care. And I think that's almost like a cheat code.
It is. The thing is, I don't want to celebrate the fact that, like, oh my God, you know, looking backwards is the new forwards. Like, it's not. One of the things that I hate the most in any creative industry is, like, that stagnation that comes with relying on the past and not striving for new ideas. Like, I still want something, some game idea, some mechanic, anything that fundamentally only works on the newest generation of consoles. I'm still waiting for that, or hardware. But it's more just a reminder of, like I said, what the industry thinks people want, because every time they keep trying this whole four-person co-op looter shooter whatever, your Suicide Squads, your Exo Primals, and also, I don't know if you watched the Capcom Spotlight when you probably didn't do it, when they revealed that the Resident Evil 4 demo was going to be available. They did Spotlight Exo Primal, and that thing was full of premium currencies, skins, pre-order for this, the four loot color tier thing, everything that everybody hates, but it was obviously sugar-coated with, like, but also there's a Resident Evil 4 demo over here, so don't worry about it.
Right.
But I feel like Exo Primal is just going to, again, die on its arse, because who wants that? Who wants to take an idea that could be Dino Crisis and flesh it out into like Anthem? It's not even fleshing it out. It's taking the flesh off and then just stringing out the bones until you can monetize them. And so, yeah, I just think that that's an interesting talking point, that some of the highest reviewed games compared to the ones that have been bombed or have bombed are old school games from the 2000s, from the quote unquote golden era. Because yes. I think we go back and forward on, do we have the nostalgia glasses on, or certain points of the industry were better, or certain ideas were getting off the ground that aren't allowed now or wouldn't make enough money now or whatever it is. And at least critically, and obviously sales-wise, these are doing very, very well. So I think that's an interesting talking point as the year rolls out. Xputer.com are reporting that From Software have an unannounced project that's been in production since January 2022. I'm just going to quote their write-up. They said, according to LinkedIn profile from Kenneth Chan, a producer slash director at From Software, it was revealed that the studio has been working on an unannounced project since January 2022. The project is separate from Armored Core 6, Fires of Rubicon. What a name!
What a name!
What a name for a game, Fires of Rubicon, which was announced at the Game Awards last year. They also said, they cited an interview with Hidetaka Miyazaki talking to 4Gamer, where he was asked about what he wanted to do after Elden Ring, and he said he wants to work on an abstract fantasy project. Now, this kind of goes alongside stuff that we've talked about before, the idea of Brandon Sanderson, the sort of legendary fantasy writer, doing whatever the next Elden Ring-style game is. So the idea of, you know, a more higher fantasy game coming, that still, for me, is still in the same maelstrom of what that's actually going to be.
Yeah.
But I guess it's worth knowing, regardless, that they've been working on something since January last year that isn't Armored Core.
That's so, crazy, yeah. Aren't they?
Like, oh, their turnaround is insane.
As a company, yeah. They cover so much. I mean, lest we forget, we've got Armored Core, but we've also got the Elden Ring expansion that's coming that they just announced last month as well. Mm-hmm. So the idea that they would have 2 games and a DLC seems crazy, but if anyone can do that, I think From Software can do it. And, you know, I hope that they're kind of like reaping the reward for Elden Ring. I hope that's given them more resources, more time, more money to be able to pump into these projects and have them, you know, be as premium as that game was. Mm-hmm. And to me, I'm just excited to see whatever they do next. Like, if you asked me last year, do I want to see a new Armored Core? I'd have said no. But From Software having enough trust gained from me that I can just be like, okay, let's see how that turns out.
Yeah,
like,
I'm curious.
What are you interested in?
Yeah, I'm curious how that thing plays. I've played like what, Armored Core 2 for like 10 minutes at a friend's house. Like, I barely remember how that thing even moves. But I'm curious what that is. I think for me, it's like, we just talked about that idea of like, you know, what the industry thinks you want, and like that idea of like turnaround, and the idea of back in the 2000s reusing game engines a lot more than they do, a lot of projects do these days. The idea of something like Resident Evil 2 remake and then 3 remake coming so soon after was because there was a lot of just using the same engine, the RE engine that Capcom made. For RE2 remake that then gets used in RE4. So you have quite a consistent rollover, and Village is in the middle of there too. I feel like the way that From Software operate, they do use a lot of the same engines over and over again in a great way. Like, they make it work. It's not like Bethesda where you see the cracks in the forming kind of thing. And they were able to go from, you know, do the Dark Souls trilogy, do your Bloodborne, and then step it up with Sekiro, and everything's faster and whatever. And then Elden Ring is like the most grandest thing they've ever done. So I feel like I trust this. Like, even though it is quite a short timeline, they've largely hit a game every 2 years for the last decade or so. So, like, whatever this is, it'd be insane if it's a whole new IP again. But I imagine it'll just be Elden Ring 2. I'm just going to go out there and say it's Elden Ring 2 written by Brandon Sanderson.
Here's the thing, though, right? You say it might be insane if it's a new IP, but would it? They went from Dark Souls to Bloodborne to Sekiro to Elden Ring, and you had Dark Souls sequels within that. But I think, man, they absolutely love a new IP over at that company.
And it's a little bit of him, though.
And I think that if this game is separate, it would make total sense, because I do think an Elden Ring 2 will come at some point, but it wouldn't be in their MO, I don't think personally, to rush it out. They always like to change things up.
True.
And while I think there's too much money in not doing it, I think the DLC will satiate fans and hold them over while they do Armored Core, while they do this high fantasy game, and maybe even something else before they get around to
They've managed to get into that position, like Naughty Dog, where people are excited for the next From Software game, which is such a rare thing to be able to cultivate. Because I always thought, and I largely do think, that the only reason they did new IPs each time is because they had a different publisher every time. So it's like Sony owned Bloodborne, Activision owned Sekiro. It was always that whole idea, and Bandai Namco have Elden Ring. So it's like, if they, like, that idea of that's they have to do that. And so I always thought they were maintaining their independence as a creative team by switching publishers and not being beholden to a publisher saying, we want another one of them.
Yeah.
Because Activision would have made them do a Sekiro 2. Yeah. And I have to imagine they negotiated something to not bleed that franchise into the ground.
It's still insane, by the way, that that is an Activision game. I know. It doesn't make any sense.
Like the best
whatsoever.
Published Activision game in quite some time.
Yeah.
Just because of whatever magic Miyazaki's managed to pull off with his contractual terms as they put that together. But yeah, in theory, I mean, we've got Fires of Rubicon later this year, I think, for Armored Core, and then there's the Elden Ring stuff is this year as well. Yeah, and then like next year will be whatever the next big From Software thing is, even though there's another big thing in Armored Core this year. I wanted to mention as well, this is just another talking point thing, from analyst Benji Sales, just saying that Kepler Interactive, who published Sifu and Scorn, they've said that both those properties were highly successful. And this is just written up by Benji over on his Twitter, just saying that in 2022, the publisher said that they had hugely successful launches from Ebb Software making Scorn and Slow Clap making Sifu, and said that Sifu has sold more than 2 million units, which I love.
That is great.
As someone who adored Sifu.
I'd love a sequel to both of those games. I really would. I mean, for as much as Scorn was probably more divisive than Sifu, it was still very nice, wasn't
it? Game of the year?
Don't think that's true.
One of the games of the year?
It was a game of the year.
Top 50 was pretty good.
It was a game that came out last year.
It did. It was one of the games of the year.
We should agree with it. We can agree on that one at the very least. But
I love Scorn.
Had a lot of potential. I think we can both agree on it. Had a lovely aesthetic. It had
very wet.
Some really very wet. Not the game wet, just literally wet.
No. That's what you want to remake, mate.
Yeah, I don't know.
Get Eliza Dushku back in.
I don't know if that's true.
Is she even still alive? I have no idea.
She will be.
She's doing stuff.
Yeah, I hope
probably.
So. Yeah.
Wet too. Wetter.
Bring it back for Buffy as well. Buffy is really good. The Buffy game. Make the Buffy game.
Do the Alias game while you're on. That game had around the corner stealth takedowns years before anyone else did, and I loved it.
And then we'll top it all off with a remake of Lost, the game.
Yes, and Dark Angel.
Lost. Just okay. Lost.
You don't want to get too carried away.
Don't push it.
The old ABC bundle. You can get to put some stuff out. Sorry, you were saying something about how awesome things were.
I was just talking about how I would love a sequel to both those games. Yes. It's exciting that they were both successful, considering they weren't these massive mainstream releases. I know Sifu was aligned with Sony, Scorn was aligned with Xbox. That came out Game Pass day one, so it's cool to see that they found an audience, because they very much could have just fallen by the wayside. I think Sifu especially, which came out, right next to Horizon Forbidden West and right next to Elden Ring, that could have just been kicked in the bin. So the fact that it wasn't, in the fact that I think it's getting DLC now,
there's a season plan thing rolling out, and they've already added like a bullet time mode where like different enemies slow down when you hit them. There's a bunch of different photo mode filters and costumes. I think they announced some other part of like Arena DLC that they're doing as well.
Nice.
That game, though, I mean, I loved Sifu so much. I feel like the way the story's set up, the idea of like hinging the whole time mechanic on a certain medallion, and maybe you can give that to a different character, and maybe that's how you do a Sifu too. Or maybe you have it that your character passes it on to the next person.
Yeah.
And it's like it's the bloodline lineage of people who can manipulate time to get revenge or whatever. That game was just so cool. It was just so well put together. It was so fun and stylish. I love Sifu. If they want to do a whole Sifu like trilogy, that'd be lovely.
Play a Sifu, I think, is the takeaway point of this whole podcast. Foo. Please play Foo.
Yeah. It's good to just put words before Foo. This has been the wind up Foo. The wind Foo. Because yes, overall, I feel like we're kind of in between releases at the minute. Resident Evil 4 is out on Friday.
Yeah.
And then it's a bit of a wait, and I forget what the next big thing is. But it'll be way away in June as like Street Fighter 6. So it's a little bit sparse at the minute. But I feel like because of that, people are rallying around, okay, what have I missed? What have I got to catch up on?
Yeah.
Something from last year, maybe some hidden gems from the last few years. Whilst they look forward to things like Resi 4 and then whatever's coming out in the future.
Probably Star Wars Jedi Survivor for me. I think that's my next one after.
That got delayed, didn't it?
It did. It's April.
Right.
So
was that in April? April?
Yeah, end of April. It was supposed to be March, got delayed to April. So that'll be next month. Hopefully,
yes.
Resident Evil can tide me over until then. I'll play a bit of The Long Dark, The Evil Within 2, perhaps, and then get on Jedi Survivor.
It's beautiful. Did you see, this is not related to video games whatsoever, did you see Disney showed off a real lightsaber?
I did not.
Apparently it's from a few years ago, but I saw this on my Instagram where it was just a guy on stage, I don't know which one of the random executives it was, hitting a button on a hilt and a whole lightsaber came out of it. And apparently it's done by making like a measuring tape that glows so that it extends out. And it's just there, and it made all the noises. And I was like, we're actually here in this timeline. We have lightsabers. It just took them that long.
But I get one of them. Want to see that video as soon as we're done recording, please.
As well, you should. For now, yes, this has been The Wind-Up. I've been Scott Tilford. That's been Josh Brown.
Always a pleasure, Scott Tilford.
Always a pleasure to be heard by all of you. And we'll catch you probably next week.
Probably.
But in the next few weeks, if not. Have fun. Take care of yourselves. Love everyone. And we'll catch you then.
Bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
That's the sound of another sale on Shopify, in store. Shopify POS is everything you need to sell in person. From payments to inventory, Shopify unites your sales into one commerce platform. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/retail23. Shopify.com/retail23.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.